I can say I tried it many times, and it seems to always come out right, over.
My gut feel, Mel, is that the technique gets you into the ballpark. But when it comes to the second place, I think it gives you the first decimal of the right answer. In other words, it'll allow you to tell the difference between a 50-ohm resistor and a 30-ohm resistor of your original impedance of the antenna. But would it allow you to tell the difference between 45 ohms and 49 ohms? I'm a little bit troubled by that one. I think there's an inherent error in the technique. I'm not positive. I'm going to test it a little bit further. Consider one other possible answer, and that is, when you started off with the original antenna, in your example, it had a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, and we can all draw a circle on a Smith chart with the right diameter representing 3-to-1, and you know that that antenna is somewhere on that circle. Let me drop it. In your example, when you added a 25-ohm resistor, you ended up with a circle something close to 2-to-1. I think it's 1.88, but we'll call it 2-to-1. You added a 25-ohm resistor, and now you had a 2-to-1 circle. Mathematically, unfortunately, this is mathematics where there is a J component, a real and imaginary component in the numerator and the denominator of the mathematics. And this is a beautiful example of learning how to use manipulation of complex arithmetic. But what you've done with that is you've got two equations and two unknowns. You know how to write down the equation for how you determine the first standing wave ratio, or let's call it reflection coefficient. The first reflection coefficient, let me drop, where you got the 3-to-1 is the complex impedance of the antenna on the numerator minus 50 ohms, and that same complex impedance of the antenna in the denominator plus 50 ohms. Now the original impedance, they usually call it the Z. So Z minus 50 on top, Z plus 50 on the bottom, that equals a reflection coefficient of 0.5. That's what the 3-to-1 standing wave ratio is. And the second equation is again Z plus 50 on top, because you added Z plus 25. Z plus 25 on top, but you took 50 away from the top to do the reflection coefficient calculation. Plus 50, minus 50, plus 25, minus 50, you end up with minus 25. So on top, you've got Z minus 25. On the bottom, you're going to have Z plus 75. And that equals the new reflection coefficient, which, as I remember, was something like 0.3. So the first equation gave you 0.5. The second equation gave you 0.3. You've got two equations and two unknowns. The resistance is unknown. The reactance is unknown. And that is a solvable situation. But again, exactly like you said, you're going to get the ambiguity. You'll know the magnitude of the resistance, no problem. You'll know the magnitude of the reactance, but you're not sure is it capacitive or inductive. And so it takes a third test, your capacitive test. So it could be solved mathematically. I'm having a little bit of a problem right now with the swinging the compass between circle number 3 and circle number 2. I'm a little worried that there's an error term in that one, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, what I did, after I swung the capacitor, and I saw that in this case I had a situation where I was inductive, my reactance was 36, 37 ohms. I then figured out, I swung the capacitor, not knowing what it was, and then measured the capacitor at the time, and I saw that the capacitor, it did come out, that it, the way I worked it out, that the capacitor did added up to conversion from 36 ohm reactive to balance it out, to balance out the inductance, it worked out when I tested the capacitor. In other words, once I got the capacitor sort of peaked to not, you know, to balance out the reactant, I measured it, Dick, over.
When it comes two simple instrumentation that you and I can put in the shack to try to figure out what the antenna is. Your bird watt meter or your standing wave ratio bridge will tell you the magnitude of the reflection, and that's what the standing wave ratio is also telling you. If we had the ability to know what is the phase angle of that reflected signal, we've got everything. That allows you to go directly, with no ambiguity, right to a dot on the chart. I will admit that measuring phase of an RF signal in the shack is a little bit beyond what the average guy feels comfortable with. And that's a slight problem here. Putting in a tunable capacitor, and by the way, I've forgotten what value of capacitor you put in when you tried to resolve the reactive ambiguity. You probably put in a pretty high quality capacitor of some kind, and I'm not sure whether or not it was a variable. But putting in a variable capacitor or a fixed capacitor is quite easy. Putting in a variable inductor is considerably more difficult for the average guy to do that mechanically, so to speak, and to have enough tuning range. And the nice thing about a capacitor is that one simple swing of the knob allows you to make a great big capacitive range change. Most inductors don't act that way. It takes a whole lot of turns or pushing of a slug, and now you've got rapid change, but it's not quantitative anymore. Whereas the capacitor, you could put a calibration dial on it and have a lot of fun with it. So, when it comes to selecting various impedances of an antenna, like a 10-ohm resistor and a 30-ohm reactor, or a 150-ohm resistor and a 30-ohm capacitor, I wonder if you've tried a couple of potential antenna impedances like that, then added the 25-ohm resistor, then swung circle number one, number two, and number three. I think you're going to get a ballpark answer, but as I said, I'm a little worried there may be an error term built in there, Mel. With 3-to-1 and 2-to-1, it looks like it works very well. I'm a little bit afraid that with some other values of the original impedance of the antenna, it might not work out quite as well. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Well, I used a capacitor at the time with one of radio capacitors. You remember those 365 MMF capacitors that they used to use in all the radios take over?
Absolutely. That was an industry standard. All AM radios. The RF, they had two capacitors ganged together. One of them did RF tuning of the selective circuit that allowed the right radio station to come in. The second gang moved the oscillator. So the big portion was 365. The smaller portion was something like 265. But 365 picofarad variable air tuning capacitors where the plates mesh with each other, an extremely standard value in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then with the AM transistor radios, for a while they had the same size capacitor in miniature in a little bitty plastic box. Modern day AM radios don't do it that way. They're now frequency synthesized for the LO, and they've got a variable reactor made out of a very capped diode for the variable capacitor. So the air type or the plastic type miniature 365 picofarad capacitor I think is almost gone in the 21st century. I'll bet you there's very few of them being manufactured today, Mel. K2KEY, I've got quite a few of them in my junk box. I bet you've got 10 of them, K2RIW.
I dropped the seat. Somebody else will get in here. Yeah, that was the, I should say, standard capacitor of the industry at the time who made radio. But I did this several times, Dick, you know, with different antennas, loads, and things like that. Remember, I had very simple instruments. I'm going back a long, long time ago. And when I did this, and this is something I just was sitting in, I could think of train doodling, and, playing with the Smith chart, which was always one of my favorite things
to do blotting on and all. I just always used to marvel at how it would tell me so much. And I did this several times, Dick, by this method, using that, and it always came out fairly close, because then when I was able to substantiate much later, when somebody was nice enough to come over, a time with a general radio, made a very good piece of equipment for measuring resistive and reactive components. You know, there was a professional instrument. I more or less found I was very close, Dick, with this method, over.
If the example you gave last week, Mel, was the original antenna 25 ohms of resistance and 30 ohms of reactance, go ahead.
The original, I could say, I just measured the SWR on the original antenna, and I found it had a 3-to-1 SWR as I measured it originally with my original SWR bridge, Dick, over.
Understand. And then when you went through this procedure and came up with the amount of reactance of that 3-to-1, what was the Smith-Chart method indicating as that magnitude of reactance, Mel? How many ohms of reactance made the 3-to-1?
Let's see, originally. Okay, I swung the 3-to-1. What did I measure then? Who the heck remembers that? I could tell you, what I did is I put the resistor in, and I got the SWR measurement as then 2-to-1 with the resistor, Dick. You remember, let me come up with some ideas for what I did originally. I think with the, originally, if, with the original load, then versus the 2-to-1 load, I don't remember what my exact measurements were at the time. I'm trying to recall, a long time ago, I could say. And I just came up with this method of making the three circles and all, and compensating for that resistor that I added at 25 ohm. It may have been a little different, you know. I don't even know if I was able, really, 25 ohms. I just had to really, you know, go by what my old analog meter would tell me, over.
Okay. I think in the beginning of your discussion last week, your memory was that it was 3-to-1, and with the 25 ohm resistor, it went to 2-to-1, and you seem to remember that the final antenna was 25 ohms resistance and something like 30 ohms of reactance. And as an approximation, not bad, but if the resistive component of the original antenna was 25, it takes a little more than 30 ohms of reactance to hit 3-to-1, 32.3. And so, as I said, what worries me a little bit is that the amount of horizontal displacement between the two right-hand sides of the 2-to-1 circle and the 3-to-1 circle, the horizontal displacement on the right and the horizontal displacement on the left, they're equal to each other. However, that's only true where you've walked around the Smith chart or you've walked down the transmission line. Let me drop. You walk down the transmission line the right distance so that the antenna is a pure resistance. And every antenna through the right length of transmission line somewhere will be a pure resistance. It may not be 50 ohms, but it's going to be a pure resistance. Any other place on the circle where it's not directly on the horizontal line, the amount of displacement between the two circles is no longer easily calculated. If, for instance, on your 2-to-1 circle, if you choose dot that's as high up as you can get, and that's the real reactive component, and then you choose a spot on the 3-to-1 circle that equals the same amount of reactance, that horizontal displacement, I think, is a different number. So it's close, but it's slightly different, and it's going to be an error term. I think it's a good technique to get a ballpark. It gets you definitely in the ballpark. I'm just not quite convinced it gets you to home plate, if you know what I mean. Whereas the mathematical process gives you exact answers, two equations and two unknowns. That's the good news. And with modern-day calculators, you can properly program it to do all that. Let me drop. You take a Hewlett-Packard 48, Hewlett-Packard 50, Hewlett-Packard, what was the number I had before that? Can't even think of the model number now. It wasn't the 25, but the modern-day Hewlett-Packard calculators will handle all the complex mathematics, the in-phase and the quadrature, or the, what is it also called, the real and the imaginary. They handle those divisions and multiplications very nicely. When you do it by paper, hand paper, you got to be careful because the standing wave ratio you measure is a certain gamma, as it's called, and I think you've used those words already. That's a certain reflection coefficient called gamma, and you have to take the absolute value of gamma, which some people call rho. So when you've got equations that have got imaginary and real numbers in the numerator and the denominator, and you got absolute values around some of those things in the numerator and the denominator, and you've got two equations and two unknowns, not too many of the guys within the sound of you and my voice would be able to handle that. I can see why the Smith chart is a much nicer way of doing it. But with the right kind of a modern-day calculator, it could be done. And that would give you an exact answer. I'm going to look into this a little bit further because I see a lot of merit to this. And I'll bet you there's a way of going one step further with the way you use the compass on the Smith chart to get rid of even the error term. And I think there might be an error term there. At least each time I do it, I ended up with an error in the second decimal place, so to speak. K2KEY, K2LIW.
This is K2KEY. Yeah, I just found some notes. When this guy Bob came over that time with the general radio instrument and he measured it, he said, yeah, I was approximately the original load was somewhere at the SWR was around 3.0. With the series resistor put in, my series resistor put in, he measured a resistance of 28 ohms and a reactance of 37 ohms. And he says that measurement meant that my, I found this note, I know I had it somewhere, you asked me. And he said that means that my series resistance was actually around 27 ohms, thick over.
Okay, right now I'm a little worried that the, well, maybe right, 28 resistor, 37 reactants. I'll be back in 30 seconds and tell you what I think that standing wave ratio is.
Okay, original was, this, the original load was around 3.0, and he said that when I put the resistor in, he measured 28 ohms resistive, 37 ohms reactive, and he said that means that my series resistor was around 27 ohms thick, over.
And that's a little bit less than a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, but very close to standing wave, 3-to-1. And then I think you said you put in a 25 ohm resistor, and you believe it turned out to be 2-to-1, is that true?
In other words, that's what I was off. My 25 ohm resistor was 27, around 27 ohm. You know, I was resolving this thing. I had nothing really accurate to measure with, other than a very, this is, like I said, I did this back so many years ago. I bet you it could be 35 years, 40 years ago, back in, I think I did this in the 70s. So I had very little really to, I didn't have any, you know, really laboratory standards to go by. So I did a lot of estimating, but I tried it several times and got me very close in the ballpark, Dick. At least I always do with my reactants. Whatever time I check the reactants for plus or minus, I always was able to come up with whether it was plus or minus. And when I measured the capacitor, it really did come out very close, Dick, over.
Yeah, those numbers are beautiful. So, 28 resistor, 37 reactant of the original antenna. It's just a little bit under 3 to 1. Add exactly 27 ohms to that.
Connected.
And you end up with 2.009, very close to 2 to 1 standing wave ratio when you added the 27 ohm resistor. Okay. And so I'm going to try those particular numbers. So you believe you've tried a number of potential antennas. You chose a resistor. In other words, if you had a random variable and you choose a resistor within range, and a random variable where you choose a reactor in range, calculate what the VSWR is by way of a Smith chart or whatever, and then do this procedure of adding a 25 ohm resistor. Sounds like you've done it quite a few times. You've got an answer which you believe is reasonable. Do you remember seeing any error in the answers? In other words, you calculated by the procedure what was the original impedance, but because you knew what the original impedance was, you've got the hidden information, so to speak, you can compare the two answers using the Smith chart and find out if there was an error. Did you see any substantial error, or was the error always within the pencil width when you did that by this method, Jeff? K2KEY, K2RIW?
Say it was fairly accurate for its time, because when I tried, when I was able to get somebody over with a good instrument, when we, one guy once, in fact, one guy had a nice portable shortwave receiver that was a pretty nice instrument at the time, and a noise bridge, regular old-fashioned, you know, a noise bridge. And we did it with the noise bridge, and it came out, you know, you remember the calibration on all these things. You had to look at the knob, you looked at the way it was, where it was pointing to as close as possible. And in other words, you know you couldn't achieve anywhere near the calibration or the accuracy that is available today. But I'll tell you something, Dick, if I did it out on paper, like you say, once I, you know, if I wanted to just calculate out using the Smith chart, you know, different VSWRs and with the resistor, I came out always with the reactant component, the reactant, in ohms, very close to that, but I didn't know if it was plus or minus, so this thing sort of told me, finally, whether it's plus or minus, over.
And when you use the technique, Mel, one of the big things you want to know is what is the reactive component, its magnitude, plus or minus. You want the technique to also tell you what was the original resistive component of the antenna before you added the 25 ohm resistor. Was that also reasonably accurate? And was it always a 25 ohm low reactance resistor that you always added when you did it in reality, when you really did it with the real hardware, not just as an example on a Smith chart? Over to you, Mel, K2LIW.
It always worked out very close, Dick. Yeah, if you want to, you know, cap off decimal places, definitely. Let's put it this way. The method was simple enough for me at the time to be able to just add the resistor, measure it before, add the resistor, make another measurement, take the plots on the Smith chart, and come up with, you know, the ballpark figures of both the resistive and the reactive component, and then resolve just whether or not it was plus or minus with a simple variable capacitor. That was my whole instrumentation thing. So I was amazed that the thing I was purposely looking for is always trying to resolve. I always could come up with a reactive, you know, component, but I never knew if it was plus or minus, over.
How often did you actually do this on a real antenna? Unless you know that you've got a fixed number of half wavelengths of transmission line, giving you the ability to do the measurement in the shack, you're sort of forced to do the measurement at the antenna, in theory, when the antenna is up in the air. So knowing that your transmission line has a certain velocity factor, and you can add and subtract other lengths to it to force it to be some number of half wavelengths, That's a convenient way to make the measurement in the shack. Other than that, Brent, I think the technique would not work with a random length of transmission line. Was your 25 ohm resistor always the number that you used? Was it an Allen Bradley, a carbon composition resistor, which has very little inductance? And did you, on more than one occasion, make the measurement up in the air or right at the antenna? K2KEY, K2LIW.
I was always at the dipole up on the roof that I did it. I was using fan dipoles and all kinds of things, and I had to do it up there. I didn't have any transmission line, Dick. I was using 300 ohm wire. So you would just, you know, get an idea what the antenna is like up there, and then fix it all up the way best I could, whatever I could, so I sort of got everything looking good. And then put the 300 ohm television twin lead on, and like I say, it was very crude back then, they, and that was what my method. But when I did now take into consideration good quality coax cable, and I tried the method again later on, years later, it still seemed to work out pretty good, Dick. Over.
I think that the slight error that I believe is there, and I'm not positive yet, is correctable by adding a fudge factor on the way you interpret the results from the third circle and the way it intercepts the second circle. I think there's a way of adding a fudge factor to even remove that error. Okay. I think we've gone down the list of people who signed in, but I'm not positive. Let's see. Rich, Glenn, Wesley, and let's see, was there another person who signed in? My sheet is a little bit stumpy here. Who have we skipped? Please speak up right now. K2RIW in the deckhand.
What is the check-in?
K2AZ.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought Bob signed in earlier, and so we're going to go back to Bob. And who is the new check-in? Please give me your call letters and your name, sir.
Hello, Bravo 1, India Fox Yankee. Bill is there.
Okay, Bill. India Fox Yankee. Hello, Bravo 1. Stand for it. Alrighty. Bob, go right ahead with your question. AC2AZ. We're discussing antennas tonight. That's what you'd like to talk. You got it, Bill. Bob, K2LIW, the deathmatch.
Ah, perfect night for it then. Okay, I did something stupid this week. My G5RZ fell in last. And you know, the wire broken. So I put it up, and it was actually quite, working quite well with about 20 feet off the end of it. It was a full size of 102. So I went out and bought some stainless steel wire, and you know, I know stainless steel doesn't have the conductivity of copper, but I'm kind of surprised to find that the 50-foot length was 12.5 ohms. So I guess my question is, I find that here I can't load it up, and I'm getting very suspicious. I would think even with 12.5 ohms in each leg, and that's distributed, and current's going to be maximum right at the junction of the twin lead goes down, so I can't imagine you have a lot of loss towards the end, but anyway, I just cannot load this up at all. I can't get anything less than a 3-to-1 SWR with a tuner, and I was wondering, should I be, would that 12 ohms really do that much? And or maybe do I have a disconnect in my antenna out there, and maybe I didn't hook it up properly?
I can think of about three things going on here, Bill. Correction, Bob. I'm going to call you Bill so many times. I'll eventually get that right. And you being a scientist can do a little bit of a further investigation. I had a painful experience 2 years ago where I built an antenna out of stainless steel because of the ruggedness and the environment the antenna had to survive. Stainless steel appeared to be the right material. I had previously used stainless steel, a very thick slab of it, with a previous antenna that resulted in a very nice patent and a nice deliverable product. However, the previous product had used a rather thick layer of gold plating over the stainless steel slab on this patch antenna. A printed circuit-like patch antenna. What I discovered is that stainless steel has a resistance a little bit lower than nichrome wire. wires are used, as you know, is used for resistors. Many heating elements are made out of nichrome. So stainless steel is a pretty high resistor material. When you measured the 12.5 ohms of each side of your G5RV stainless steel dipole when it dropped, you are making that measurement at zero frequency with an ohm meter, most likely. And the number of ohms that a resistor material behaves, this demonstrates, to an RF wave when you get skin resistance, life becomes very complicated. In most materials like copper, the RF energy only goes down 1/10,000th of an inch into the outer surface of the copper, and it stops. It doesn't go any further when RF frequencies are going through the conductor, across the conductor. You could make your copper antenna at RF frequencies completely hollow, and nothing would change, per se. So the 12.5 ohms at your frequency probably is quite a number of higher ohms. I don't know the number, but if someone told me that RF-wise, your nichrome wire has a resistive component of 35 ohms, I would believe it. Now it's starting to become significant. Another thing to worry about is that soldering to stainless steel is itself an art form. If you use the right kind of Tinner's fluid, it's called, and at least the hardware stores used to sell Tinner's fluid, and you properly apply that to the stainless steel, depending on which one of the alloys, there's a zillion different alloys of stainless steel, eventually you can make it take solder pretty well. However, out in the weather, you'd be amazed how many times a solder joint on stainless steel, some amount of weeks or months downrange, is no longer making contact. It peels away. So are you getting a good joint? What is the real resistance component at the RF frequency? And these are some of the variables involved, as you can tell. When you say it doesn't tune at all, you couldn't get it below 3:1, whereas the original antenna, I'm going to guess the hit number is like 1.5 at your favorite frequency. Are you talking about every one of the frequencies where G5RV is being used, or just one particular frequency? Over to you, Bob. AC2AZ, KQIIW in the TechNet.
Yeah. Question.
Wesley recognized that Bob first. Go ahead, Bob, as soon as this noise stops.
You're a G5RV. And the old wire was like 14-gauge, 7-strand, hard-drawn. And at the end, because I don't have the length, I had it through pulleys. And I think the action of going through the pulleys too many times caused it to break. So I went ahead and then one for strength, two for outdoor corrosion protection, and then three for flexibility. I used 7x7 strands. And maybe the many strands are giving me the problem, but I would think you talk about skin current and skin depth. I would think the 7x7 strands would give me a lot more surface area for conductivity. And yeah, that was 12 ohms at DC. And but I guess I'm still kind of surprised. You know, I mean, this thing is supposed to, the tuner is supposed to be able to tune into almost anything. And I guess I'm surprised that an added 20-30 ohms, and I guess that's again at DC, would cause me so many problems. But I did not solder. I used crimps. I basically bought the little micro-press
crimp wire.
I used the hex die, and I crimped everything together. Did not solder anything. And I'm showing gas tight fit. Back to you.
Yeah, I missed the beginning of your Bob. How many bands did you measure the standing wave ratio of your G5RV on? And the 7 strands, like you said, it's becoming like lit wire. It should work pretty well, a lot of extra surface area, except that lit wire is almost never used beyond about a megacycle. They use it at much lower frequencies most of the time. There's a so-called bundling effect or something like that, they call it, where it doesn't quite give you the performance you'd like at the higher frequencies. So you crimped it, and when you measured the ohms from end to end, and you measure 12 and a half ohms from center to one side, I presume. I presume you also are making that measurement with the crimp connector as one of the ohm meter tests. So the two questions there, and we'll get to Wesley in a second, and that is, did you measure the ohm meter through the crimping device, and did you measure the standing wave ratio at more than one frequency? And your antenna tuner, are you telling me your antenna tuner didn't work on each one of those frequencies, or did it work on some of them? Back to you, Bob. KQRIW for second half.
I only did one frequency. I only did 40 meters because I really got nowhere. I mean, I spun these knobs and nothing happened. I barely even got a dip. And so I didn't even try any of the frequencies. That's only 40 meters. And before, I tuned up very, very well. The 12 ohms I measured was on a piece of wire sitting on my floor. By the time I realized I had a problem, the antenna was already up in the air. I didn't take it down and measure with the crimps. I suspect the crimps are going to be very, very good. I mean, because they're, you know, it's just rather regular crimp wire. But these are hard crimps made for the stainless steel. It's supposed to actually handle loads. These aren't even soft crimps. So, back to you.
Let's get back to how your antenna tuner behaved. Did either of the knobs on the antenna tuner run out of range? You said you could barely see a dip. Does that mean the knob ran out of range? In other words, you barely saw a dip with at least one of the knobs at either maximum or minimum? And when you did get a dip, was it a very sharp dip or a broad dip? Back to you, Bob.
This is a 10-tech tuner. It's an L-type tuner, so there's only two nodes active inside. One is always connected to the transmitter. One's always the other side is always connected to the receiver, or to the antenna, rather. So it's a little bit different than a regular Pi tuner. It seems like sometimes at the one end I would run out. I never got a deep dip. Everything was very, very shallow, very mediocre, no dip at all. I wouldn't even say it was anywhere near resonance. Thank you.
He never got to resonance frequency. That's what I think. That's it.
I agree with you, Wesley. He didn't hit resonance with a good impedance match. Now, since it's a simple L network, if you use it in the forward mode, in other words, you've got an inductor and a capacitor that sort of are in series, and you've got a center tap of the two. If the center tap is going to the antenna, it is an impedance step-up device. If you reverse the antenna connection and the transmitter connection, in other words, hook up the hold-on box backwards, now it would be an impedance step-down device. That would be very tempting. You may not be able to use the metering of the antenna tuner the same way. You may have to put a real standing wave ratio meter or a bird watt meter between your transmitter and the antenna tuner, but if you consider the possibility of using the antenna tuner backwards. How about you, Bob? KQRIW in the second hand.
Tuner has a high and low side, so when you switch the knob either side of the bypass, you go from a high impedance mode to a low impedance mode, and it automatically does that. You're either looking from the transmitter, you're looking at a series inductor parallel capacitance, or you're looking at the parallel capacitance and then series inductor, and the switch does that for you automatically. Back to you.
When you use that switch, which way works the best, and was there a lot of difference between the two ways? Come back to you, Bob.
There was almost no difference. I was going back and forth, and there's five positions on either side, so five positions for low, five positions for high impedance. I think one side I found something that was a little bit better than infinity, and that came down to about three, and that was about it. Otherwise, I would say no, I never found a tune.
Sometimes you have a Q-meter.
The G5RV is essentially a dipole. If you have access to the antenna, like if it's on top of the roof and you climb up on the roof and put a clip lead from the left-hand stainless steel wire to the right-hand stainless steel wire and go back into the shack and measure ohms to find out if there's a complete circuit. I'm a little bit afraid that there may be a complete open circuit somewhere along that line or correspondingly a short circuit. Put the ohm meter between center conductor and shield of the coax cable in the shack first, make sure it's an open circuit, then go up there and put on a clip lead and make sure it's something close to a short circuit. Is that doable in your case, Bob? Go ahead.
I mean, I can go up and reach it. I have everything on pulley so I can bring it back down again, so that's not an issue. Yeah, it was working before the thing broke, and even with the broken wire, the thing was working very well. So I suspect it's only a change in the stainless steel wire. I can go and measure it, but there is a one-to-one balance in between there. I think a one-to-one current balance. So I'm not sure what the balance is doing. I've got to look at the pipe to see if I can get a measurement. But I can always measure down at the bottom near the balance and go all the way to the very end and try that measurement.
I didn't get that. Is that happening for all of the vents or just one of the vents?
I didn't do any band except 40 meters, because I didn't get anything out of this thing, so I didn't bother going to any of the other bands.
When you worked with the previous copper wire, when one of the wires was broken, where did the wire break? And what did the new standing wave ratio go from to when that broken wire occurred? How about you, Bob?
I lost about 20 feet off of one end, and the SWR, I didn't even really notice. I just tuned it up, touched up a little bit, and it was back in tune without a problem. Back to you.
KC2, do you like to do a comment?
Glenn recognized. You've got a real mystery there. Also, many of these current balance, one-to-one balance, do have DC feed-through. They're not a short circuit, and if the output end is an open circuit, the input end with an ohm meter centered across conductor to the ground will be an open circuit, and correspondingly a short circuit on the output will be a short circuit on the input. There's ways you can test that balance, in which case you can test the whole system from shack to stainless steel wire with a clip lead and an ohm meter in the shack. Let's see what Glenn's got to say. That's amazing, yeah. The fact that the antenna tuner will not give you anything, that's a tough one. Because even a pure 50-ohm resistor up there, and you make the 50-ohm resistor, let me pick a number, 470 ohms or 16 ohms, your antenna tuner will handle that. So I'm beginning to think it's acting like an open circuit. KC2QIQ, K2LIW, you got it, Glenn.
Yeah, Dick, I think I missed something here, and I just wanted to clarify it. First I heard the word Litz wire used, and then I heard stainless steel wire. And my concern was when I heard Litz wire and crimping, that Litz wire is generally enamel-coated, and if you crimp onto a enamel wire without stripping it, basically there's no electrical connection. So I'm just wondering, is this truly stainless steel wire? And when the crimp connection was made, was it making a good electrical connection between the crimp and the wire itself? Because, as I said, if it was really Litz wire with enamel coating, there wouldn't be an electrical connection there. K2RAW, KC2QXD.
That would be too easy.
In that, I think I'd be out of a job. No, it's not Litz wire. It's not enamel coating. It's straight 304 stainless 7x7 strand, 1/16th of an inch in diameter. Basically, you know, the copper went down, and I figured I'd replace it with something a little more sturdy, and I used, you know, nice crimps, the heavy-duty crimps. Everything is crushed quite well and tight. Didn't measure it. I just didn't even think I had to, you know. And even with the 12.5 ohms DC, I would love to see what the deeps is, because I just can't believe this thing isn't working. I do pick up stations. It sounds maybe a little quieter, but I do pick up stations with it.
Anyone from you guys have an analyzer to antenna analyzer to borrow to him?
Tell me how it.
Sorry, say that again.
And to extend, what I said, say is the, maybe one of the ham radio operators has the MSJ, what is it, 255, 265. That would be actually something that will give you the answer. But just
I think a home meter test is where the clip read is going to give you the most amount of information. The fact that your antenna tuner gives you nothing reasonable suggests to me that there's a complete open circuit, because that stainless steel wire, the seven strands with the crimp connectors, should be making contact. But an ohmmeter test on the stainless steel with a clip lead is going to give you a lot of information. You're going to get a crazy answer with an antenna tuner corresponding to the crazy answer you've already, answer with a antenna analyzer corresponding to the crazy answer you've already got with the antenna tuner. A good antenna tuner with a reading for 40 meters is supposed to cover all possible ways of making, let's say, a 4-to-1 visual. And the 12.5 ohms that you measure with an ohmmeter on the stainless steel wire, that doesn't quite explain it. K2LIW listening, who's got a suggestion?
KC2QIQ with another thing to be clarified about the balun. Where is the location of the balun? At the dipole part or down at the bottom? And here again, what kind of G5RB is this? And was there any modification other than the wire made to the antenna? KC2QIQ.
We're going to wait for the beep, and then Bob is going to give us those answers.
The balun is at the bottom. It's a Radio Works full-size 102-foot unit, and the current balun is basically for isolation. You know, you can put the coax directly into the twin lead at the bottom. But they recommend that you either wind up the coax a bit to keep the currents off the shield, or to put a current balun in there. So I bought this thing complete with the current balun. And the only thing up at the top is the 450-ohm ladder line, basically, my twin lead, that comes up and connects to each side of the stainless. And that's all I did, was replace the copper wire and crimp everything. And, you know, that was it. That's all I did to it.
I hope you get a chance to do that clip read ohmmeter test. You have to first confirm that the balun has a feed through. Do an ohmmeter test on the balun, input to output. But then the ohmmeter test on the stainless steel wire is going to give you a lot of information in a very simple way. I think you've got a complete open circuit somewhere, because even if I made the dipole section out of a distributed resistive network, it still should give you a somewhat understandable performance with the antenna tuner that you're using. So I think something grossly is misconnected, is my best guess. And with any further suggestions, give me your call letters right now. Wait for the beep first, K2LIW.
Copper quad wire.
He'd like to know what's wrong with this particular one first. Glenn and then Wesley in that order is what I heard. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, on this one, Dick, I have to agree with you 100% with the ohmmeter test. I think that would be the first approach I would take with this one, even outside of an antenna analyzer of any type, because it sounds that usually the antenna tuner is going to give you a really broad range of tuning. And the fact that you can receive something and it won't tune up on transmit into anything definitely sounds like an indication of an open circuit. And usually that's something that an ohmmeter will probably get you there the quickest.
I said the same.
Now, part of what's going on here is that a receiver is amazingly forgiving. You can put a 100-to-1 standing wave ratio antenna on a receiver. Your S meter will not move quite as far, but you'll get beautiful reception. You can choose the 40-meter band, for instance. Take nothing but a couple of feet of clip lead that you've got around the shack. Connect it to the center conductor of the coax cable connector on the back of the receiver, and you'll get reception. Medium good reception. When the guy ordinarily is an S9, under those conditions, he'll be an S3. And part of what's going on is you've got a huge amount of gain adjusting dynamic range on the receiver, the automatic gain control circuit, invented by the people at the Hazeltine, by the way. And in the early days, they had lots of patents on that. Beautiful circuit. Before they built the AGC circuit, you would be having the gain the receiver set up real high. You'd be slowly tuning across the band, and somebody a couple of miles away would start transmitting, and your earphones would be blasted, if you know what I mean. The automatic gain control circuit takes care of that. So the bottom line is, a receiver is amazingly forgiving. Try to transmit back on 40 meters through that clip read, and you're not going to get anywhere. The guy next door to you is not much further down the block, if you know what I mean. So you could have a complete open circuit with just a minor amount of capacitive coupling across, say, for instance, a crimp onto that stainless steel wire. I doubt it, but anywhere in the system you could have a complete open circuit, and the receiver, like he said, a little bit quieter, but continues to work. But, the scientist in you, Bob, is going to want you to find out what it is, and I think the clip read test. We're going to give you a homework assignment. We'll be listening. We'll be all waiting with bated breath when you come back next week. AC2, AZ, to take it. For anybody, K2LIW in the tech net.
Good comment.
Bob first, and then Wesley in that order. Go ahead, Bob.
I'm going to try that because I'm hoping I missed the connection or something, or maybe something broke when I put it back up. I don't know what. The stainless steel is a beautiful execution, you know. It's a nice piece of work. I've got nice pictures of it and all that stuff, and I hate to think that the stainless isn't going to work. But I'm going to make those checks sometime this week, and I'll get back to you guys hopefully next week. It'll work this week and find out. In any case, I'm going to bail. It's getting late here, and I'm going to hit the sack. And Wesley, I offered to help you there. I'm not sure how to get you some information with this person on the air over here. I don't want to hand out my name or phone number, so I'm not sure if we can work this out. Maybe catch up next week.
Okay, Bob. Thank you very much. And you know what? I guess Dick, you're going to correct me, but I've got to. In 70s, I've got the same effect in the first house. What happens is he had a problem with the antenna that was a few years working good, and he asked the connector, and he had the antenna tuner. Now, what's happened is that the connector wasn't touched for many years, and when he put it back, the center of the wire actually shorted through the connector with the outer part of the coaxial, and the antenna tuner was able actually to give him a series of very narrow dips. The amplifier wasn't so great power; it was 100 watts only, and. Maybe if Bob would be able to take just ohmmeter and check between the coaxial, the connector, maybe that is just a simple problem, ironic one. And the second question that I had to Bob is a scientist, and if he would be willing to say something about it, I'll be delighted. Back to the question.
Yeah, we're going to be listening forward to Bob next week. Your email, do either one of you have an email that's available on QRZ.com, therefore you can start communicating back and forth with reference to the oscilloscope? Bob first for the answer to that question.
No, I just have a mailing address on there. I haven't put anything up there, but I don't know, Dick, if you know Wesley, you can hand it to him or get it to me somehow. Maybe catch up to you at the next lecture meeting, but... I'm not a scientist, I'm an engineer, electrical engineer. I will make those ohm checks and we'll see what happens, and I'll let you guys know. I'm hoping I found that, I broke something, or, you know, that would make more sense to me than just the same with the wire high resistance. But in any case, one more note about Mars. Mars is both known as military affiliate radio and military auxiliary radio, and that is both on government documents and on their logo. Okay, I found one logo, it was a nice military-looking logo, one said auxiliary, and the other logo said affiliate. So just either one, I guess, is useful. even on Wikipedia, they start out auxiliary, and one picture says affiliate. So just that side note. With that, I'm going to head to the track for the night, and I'll see you gentlemen next week. AC2, AZ, your seat.
We'll be looking forward to hearing from you next week, Bob. Wesley, any further comments? And I guess I've got your call letters, your email address, Wesley, and maybe I can pass that over to Bob. Over to you, Wesley.
That would be beautiful if you could do that for me, and I would very much appreciate that. And so I'm going to be waiting for Bob to email to me, and I'm going to respond to that. I have a few telescopes right now on the eBay that I'm looking at, and it's quite a few $1,000, but I think it's worth the effort, and I just don't want to blow this, and I don't want to use improperly this money. Anyhow, you do not say my question, Dick. Is it possible that the shortest connector could affect actually the same way? Because when you don't have a deep, then you have a very high returning SWR. Back to you, Dick.
You're absolutely right. If his wiring somewhere has a short circuit, he'll get the condition that he has seen. Although I take that back. Yeah. Depending on the length of the transmission line to the short circuit, you could easily fall out of the range where the antenna tuner would handle it. At certain phase angles, certain length of transmission line into a short, many an antenna tuner will give you resonance, but it will be an extremely sharp, deep resonance, and the whole system is running hot, so to speak, with high Q. So his own meter test is going to give him a lot of information when he finishes doing that, and so we're looking forward to that. Bob, if you could mail me Hello Dick, and it'll have a return address, and I'll pass that on to Wesley. Back to you, Bob. Looks like Bob really did go away. One way or another, we'll eventually we'll make the contact. I think we've gone through the... Oh, yes, wait a minute. We've got Bill next. KB1, IFY. Go right ahead, Bill. K2RIW on the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Hopefully I won't time it out, but just a quick comment to Wesley is that one of the things I find very, very useful with the telescopes, especially the more modern ones, are two options you can get and that I think you might be interested in. One is the battery operation of the scope, because there's a lot of times there's circuits where you don't want to plug in to an electrical power line. And the other thing that's also of interest is the USB port, where you can plug in a flash drive so that when you copy images and you want to plug them into reports, the USB flash drive, you can print right to the flash drive and then plug it into your PC and export the images. It's a very, very useful feature. K2RIW, KC2, QIQ.
I'm going to respond to that quickly. Answer again. Yes, I put this all of the information I put on a paper and the connection to the computer and the format and also the USB port and stuff. Yeah, thank you very much, and maybe I catch you